Welcome to this podcast from St. Michael and All Angels Episcopal Church in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We hope you consider hitting like or subscribe. We hope you will share this audio with your friends and neighbors, help others know about our inclusive, theologically progressive community of faith. If you'd like to support our ministries, you can make a gift at stmichaelsabq.org.
Please be seated. It is great to see everyone here this morning, especially when the day is so nice outside. We could be doing something else, but you're here. It's a very interesting story in the book of Acts. The early church was running throughout the Mediterranean, and it was using a lot of the synagogues that had already been established there. And they were using the Greek Hebrew scriptures, and there were a lot of Gentiles that had been around who were called God-fearers. And they were taken by the gospel. That's when we had the first church fight. Yeah, I know it's hard to believe, but sometimes people in the church disagree with each other. Sometimes we handle conflict better than others. You see, some people thought that in order to be Christian, you had to convert to Judaism first. And for some of the Gentiles, that was quite a conversion experience. As Peter was talking about the circumcised and the uncircumcised in the morning's gospel lesson. But Peter dreamed a dream that changed his mind. There was this huge sheet that came down, and inside was all different kinds of things to eat. And Peter said, I've never eaten that stuff. It's not kosher. God said, listen to me. What I say is clean is clean. Eat. And so Peter began to understand something. God is waiting for everyone, the good people and the bad people, the righteous and the unrighteous, the Jew and the Gentile. And because of this epiphany, this understanding, the church expanded beyond imagination and didn't stay a small sect of Judaism, which it had the potential to do. God is looking for those who worship the way we do and for those who don't. God is searching, urging us to pray and to search for those who do not know that they are children of God, that God loves them, and that God is searching without conditions, something we might want to think about when we set conditions on God's love. The early church was very successful in finding these people. There's a book called The Rise of Christianity, and it's from a sociologist's viewpoint. And he came to a lot of different conclusions than probably what some of us had. He says a lot of people were adopted into the family of God, but it wasn't because the first preachers were that good, which is, you know, kind of comforting to those of us who preach. It's not because Christians were running around and healing people willy-nilly, not because their Sunday school classes were all that good, and not even because the worship was that much more compelling than what we have now. It wasn't the fact that about 300 years after today's lesson, the emperor became Christian, and therefore it behooved everyone else to become Christian. It spread almost by adoption. He says, in the modern world, the missionary who knocks on 1,000 doors is likely to convert one person. But if they're talking to friends and family and the friends of family, they're likely to convert half of the people they know. So the early church grew that way, through relationship. It spread because the early Christians found a life that was characterized by hope and possibility and meaning. And their friends and their families could see this, and they wanted to know more. step back for a little bit. Two Americans were in the United, were riding a train in Britain, and those trains have these compartments that you've seen on the Harry Potter movies and such like that. This compartment, the two men were talking, there was a very distinguished gentleman sitting across from them, and one of the Americans says to the others, "You know, I think that's the Archbishop of Canterbury." And the other guy says, "I don't think so." And the first one says, "I'll wager you $10. And the guy says, "Okay." And the first guy gets up and goes over and says, "Sir, would you mind telling us, are you the Archbishop of Canterbury?" And the man says, "Mind your own blankety-blank business. What, you know, what blankety-blank business does it make, difference does it make to you, you blankety-blank yank?" The first guy turned and sat down next to the friend, and he said, "He won't tell us whether he's the Archbishop or not." So how do you identify a Christian? Or I might as well say, how do you identify someone who is beloved by God? It becomes difficult sometimes, doesn't it? At some point, we were each marked as Christians, sealed as Christ's own. Some of you had water sprinkled over your head, as I did. Some of you were dunked, as we say in the South. The problem with being a Christian is you can't see the marks. Paul says that the Christian is marked by love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, faith. Jesus says the mark of being a Christian is how we love one another. The mark of being a Christian is how we treat each other. The whole purpose of the church, the whole purpose of faith, is really to learn how to love, to learn how to treat each other. It's not always easy, and that's why we need to study the scriptures, to study writings, to study people who have gone before us, and modern understandings of race and ethnicity and gender and all these things. It's why we come together in community. We need each other for guidance and reflection and support. And sometimes our siblings need us for our particular talents or skills or insights. And everything we do as a community really is to remind ourselves that we are loved by God and adopted by God as beloved children. The only mark or sign that we have that separates us from others is the way we love, the way we treat each other. Last week, Linda and I went to visit our daughter Sarah in New York City. And I knew I was going to preach on the book of Acts. And as I was walking along, I noticed the wonderful diversity. You know, there are over 200 languages spoken in the borough of Queens alone. And I heard a substantial part of them, some of them that I knew what were and some that I had no idea. It's this wonderful cacophony. I wondered what we would say if instead of food, Peter saw all kinds of people. And God lowered down this people of all races and all religions, the good people and the bad, and God said, "What I have made acceptable, don't you dare call unacceptable." These people are children of God just as you are. We went to the opera, went to Broadway, we saw the filming of The Tonight Show, we went to a baseball game. We did a lot in 1 week. We spent a lot of time on the subway, and as I was on the subway, invariably somebody would offer me a seat. And sometimes they were young, sometimes they were older, all different ethnicities. I don't think some of them spoke a word of English. And it told me two things. One is that people are basically decent and kind. And the other is that I look a lot older than I did the last time that I was there. Since I was young, I've read about New York, and there were two places I always wanted to go. One was Ellis Island. and we went there. From 1892 into the mid-20th century, over 12 million immigrants went through there. It's kind of a hallowed place. Now, people being broken the way we are, they had restrictions on who could come and who can do and these sorts of things. But there was this wide variety of human, kind of like a sheet let down. Then we went to Liberty Island, the Statue of Liberty. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame and the conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gate shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name is Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor, the Twin Cities frame. Keep ancient lands your storied pomp, she cries, with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, the tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Mother of exiles. Love. Christian love is not just a feeling, of course. It's how we act. The power of the early church was the power of love. Mother Church, mother of exiles. The power of the gospel changed the way they related to each other. And if we're going to be part of the healing and the hope of the world again, and the world desperately needs healing and hope, we have to change the way we relate to each other. We must change the way we relate to people whom we don't like. Even people whom we think are doing evil and destructive things, we have to change the way we live. Cannot succumb to the fear and negativity of the world. We must know our faith based, others must know our faith based on how we live. Now Matthew says we are told to be wise as a serpent and gentle as a dove because we are going out as sheep among wolves. And that's true today as it was then. And if we're going to return to a life that is characterized by hope and meaning and embrace a life that is not violent or full of anger, either in action or speak, if we're going to actively seek the good for all people, both in word and in deed, as I said, even with those with whom we disagree, we're all different people. We all have different opportunities, and the call we have in the name of Christ is different for each of us. Paul reminds us of what love looks like in the book of Corinthians. If I speak in the tongues of men and angels but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. It does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Friends, in the world we live in, Christian faith is not naive or foolish. It understands some of the moral disease and distress that affects us. But hear the words of Jesus. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you should also love one another. By this everyone will know you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.